The New York Times wrote about her, "If your image of a philanthropist is a stout gray geezer, then meet Talia Lamon." This hour, we meet the amazing Talia Lamon of Waukee, Iowa. River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. When Talia Lamon was just 10 years old, she rallied students from thousands of U.S. school districts to report more than $10 million for Hurricane Katrina relief efforts. This hour, we'll talk with her about the nonprofit she founded, Random Kid, and her new book. Before that, we'll hear about the University of Iowa's new clinic for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender patients. First, though, a look at this hour's news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Next week, the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics is opening a new clinic for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender patients. And joining me, two primary care physicians who will staff the new clinic. Dr. Nicole Nicely is with us, professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Also, Dr. Katie Imborek, a clinical assistant professor of family medicine, also at the UI Carver College of Medicine in our Iowa City studio. Doctors, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. And I'd like to correct you, if I may. I'd like to add
right
queer
yes.
to our clinic. So our clinic is the LGBTQ, and Q stands for queer, as well as questioning.
Okay. So we've added another letter to that acronym. I'll try to remember throughout this conversation. Tell me, Dr. Nicely, why does the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics see the need for a clinic devoted especially to LGBT and Q patients?
We would like to make this a more inclusive place. We realize that the LGBTQ community has some barriers to care, to excellent care. We had the great opportunity last year, Katie and I, Dr. Imborek and I, to sit at a meeting organized by the transgender students at the University of Iowa, and we heard from them that they have difficulties with access, they have difficulties with providers that do not have adequate training, they feel uncomfortable, and we just realized we need to make this better.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Imborek, can you give us some examples of the types of barriers, the type of problems that this community encountered that this clinic will solve?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Ben, first of all. So I think that one of the things is just that, unfortunately, medical field in general has not been a very friendly place for folks in the LGBTQ community. So I think that many of the problems are just that things that regular patients would normally get taken care of, going to the doctor for a cold, going to the doctor for annual checkups and things like pap smears, mammograms, that folks in that community feel like going to the doctor just hasn't been a very safe place or a welcoming place where they were understood and they weren't judged for quite some time. So I think that that's really what the goal of this clinic is that it will be a space where they are welcomed, they are affirmed, they're going to be met by staff that has had specific training and competencies that they will be able to provide that environment for them. And they're going to have physicians and providers that care for them and that are knowledge and that have had special training and that are exceedingly knowledgeable in taking care of folks from this community.
Wanted to get to the training point, follow up on that. But first of all, you met with the community, the LGBTQ community in this area in opening this clinic, in creating it. You must have heard some stories. Do you have any stories you can relate that will make it sort of more concrete in our minds? Because I think some people are saying, well, if you're gay or lesbian, you know, you're still male or female, you would have relatively most of the same health problems, wouldn't you?
Yes. So I think some of the stories that we heard in that public meeting included a young man who was born as a woman, however, identifies as a man and has transitioned to a man. And at some point, he developed some vaginal bleeding, some abnormal bleeding, and he needed to see a gynecologist. And so you can imagine when someone calls with a male voice and a male name requesting to be seen in gynecology, it created a lot of problems. Schedulers were not quite sure where to put him. He had difficulties coming in, and at some point he had to go to the emergency room because he didn't find a way to really get seen regularly. And so that's just a simple example of some of the barriers that people may face.
How unique is this clinic when it opens next week in Iowa, in the Midwest, or in the United States?
Yeah, so this is going to be a fairly unique thing, which is really one of the things that makes it so exciting, because I think that there's the possibility that we are going to attract patients from even outside of the Iowa City area. There are a fair amount of federally qualified health centers around the country. As you might imagine, some of those are more densely located on either the West or the East Coast. But there's places like the Howard Brown Health Center, which is an LGBT health center in Chicago. One of the only other academic institutions that I know of is at the University of Minnesota, and they have a really wonderful LGBTQ kind of sexual health institute there. So it is our, you know, humble hope that that what we're going to start here would one day kind of gain momentum and could be anything close to that. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have any idea of what, well, let's say your, to use a commercial term, your catchment area is? How many people will be interested in possibly coming to this clinic, and from how far away would they be coming?
Based on the interest that we received from the Quad Cities, from Des Moines, from various other places that have we have heard through listservs and all, I would think throughout the state of Iowa and the Midwest. I think we are in an academic center. That's a center that offers tertiary care. And I think if folks know that we are offering a place that is welcoming, that we're there for you. We're primary care physicians, Dr. Imbork and I, so we're creating a primary care home. That means if you go to a specialist, if you need to be seen, we would facilitate that referral. We would make sure to educate the providers that would be taking care of our patients, so that all along we are our primary goal is to provide a place that is safe and welcoming.
Will prospective patients need a referral to get into the clinic, or can anyone make an appointment in Iowa City to go to the clinic?
Anyone is welcome.
So is there no, when you come in, you don't need any documentation that you are part of this community?
Not at all. Okay. The patients self-identify and self-select at clinic. We simply would say, this is an LGBT primary care home. Would you like to be scheduled here? And if the answer is yes, they're welcome to come in.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Imbork, you mentioned a few moments ago training. Specifically, what kinds of specialized training are needed for the LGBTQ community that are not present or not as needed in traditional communities?
Yeah, so just to start off with, because I think that you really need to look at this in a much broader sense than just that the provider has received some specialized training, which I'll kind of talk about, because I think that the experience that patients have, especially folks that are in this community, that it is very much more than the provider, who they might meet and feel is, you know, very competent, very sensitive to their needs, but they've already met with so many layers of other people before they actually get to see, you know, the physician or whoever their provider may be. That I think that what one of the benefits of having this clinic is going to be is that we have been able to actually have our support staff, so the front desk staff and the schedulers and the nurses and the MAs, go through what we offer at the University of Iowa, and it's called Safe Zone Training. So it's offered through the Office of Diversity. And it's a really wonderful program that's been around for some time, and they're kind of newly revamped it. And what this does is it really kind of gets to the core of this cultural competency training for the LGBT population. So they've already been through that training. So we know that anyone that our patients come into contact with is going to have a good experience there, and they're going to be treated in a welcoming fashion. And then so all of our providers will have gone through that as well. And then in addition, just kind of talking about some of the medical training, LGBT health is not something that is required yet in medical school. I'm proud to say that at the University of Iowa that we do offer some LGBT stuff to the medical students. So I had that as I was going through med school and during my residency, because I knew that I had a certain passion for this area. I did some additional elective rotations, like at the Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago, where I worked with a lot of transgender patients, where I worked with doctors who that's all that they do all day long is only take care of folks who come to that clinic. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, I've gone to a number of different national conferences, including the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association and WPATH, World Professional Association for Transgender Health, and some transgender-specific conferences just to be able to learn more and to really talk to folks who do this on a quite regular basis and glean some of their knowledge from
Dr.
them.
Dr. Imbork, you mentioned passion there, a passion for this. How did you develop a passion for this specific community?
Yeah, so I am a lesbian, so that's kind of where all of this started. And I would have to say that I just felt like folks who are in this community, which happen to be my close friends, and that I happen to count myself as one of those, and even with my own personal experiences of going to healthcare providers, that I did note that there were times where I felt like it wasn't such a safe space for me, and that I really wanted to be able to provide that to my patients and, more importantly, be able to pass that on to the next generation of physicians through teaching medical students as well as residents.
Mm-hmm. In looking at this topic, this whole area, I noticed that in the past few months there have been articles specifically in the Daily Iowa and the University of Iowa newspaper about transgender people making complaints against the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, not being told that they couldn't be served because they were transgender. Now, I wonder if these complaints were also a factor in initiating this LGBTQ clinic.
So I think they were an inspiration for us. In fact, a couple of the folks actually met with us, and we talked to them quite at length to understand what are the barriers, what are some of the things that you see. And they really helped inspire us in many ways. They provided guidance, terminology, and helped us address what the needs were so we could be more specific in providing appropriate care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are there or have there been up to this time, what have been the alternatives to get this type of specialized care in Iowa? Were there any alternatives through, for instance, Planned Parenthood?
So, yeah. So in the Iowa City area, there are a number of providers who, like if we wanted to talk about one aspect, which often does come up because I think that it's one of the most kind of specific cares that can be provided to this population, and that would be hormone therapy for transgender patients. So the Emma Goldman Clinic has been doing some hormone therapy, and there's a Planned Parenthood in Des Moines that was doing some hormone therapy, and that physician has since left Planned Parenthood but is still working at a family practice clinic in the Des Moines area. So those are the two places that I know about off the top of my head where some of these folks could go.
And how does this new clinic fit into that existing picture?
We hope to be very collaborative in terms of kind of, you know, being able to share knowledge and talk about our tough patient cases and things like that. But we also really hope to take advantage of the fact that we are, like Dr. Nisely was saying, the University of Iowa. We have a lot of colleagues. We have great collaboration within our hospital that we would like for these patients to be able to come here and to, you know, have the benefit of all of our wonderful services and our wonderful consultants and things like that as well.
Dr. Nisely.
Just to also say, Ben, that our ultimate goal is to have a center of excellence and to have the opportunity to also do research. That's one of the things we do best. And I would like to see research be advanced in this area so we can provide better care in the future.
What can you say about the knowledge we have about this community, the LGBTQ community? Is that a vast area for research to make progress?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the focus right now. If you look at the National Institutes of Health, Institute of Medicine, there is interest in this area because, again, the knowledge is still so limited.
Throw out some questions that you think we might be able to answer that we don't know right now about that community in the future.
So in terms of conditions that normally affect populations of, say, older adults, heart disease, cancer, et cetera, what is the real incidence of those in this population? What are the risks for certain situations like more obesity in the lesbian population? Why is that? And is that prevalent for all? Are there some specific groups at higher risk? So those are some of the questions that are currently being asked. that we would like to answer.
If you just joined us, I'm speaking with Dr. Nicole Nicely and Dr. Katie Imborek of the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. They will be primary care physicians who will staff a new clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics that is opening next week, a clinic especially for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, queer patients. And we're talking with them this first half hour about the need for this clinic and how it will operate. I wanted to, you know, such simple things, Dr. Imborek, when you said, for instance, you know, it's not just a matter of a physician being trained a certain way. It's the receptionist and things like that. But thinking about medical records, one of the basic questions you have right after your name is male or female. There's a change, right?
Right. We actually had to work quite extensively with the medical records, and we are very appreciative of their effort to help us to create more gender-inclusive designations, such as transgender male, transgender female, and then how to be even more broad and inclusive. And one of the folks in the transgender community suggested non-binary as a catch-all term that could be inclusive to more people.
Non-binary.
Okay. Neither male nor female.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that catches, if you're not transgender male or transgender female, that would catch what groups that would not be in those other two categories?
I would say nothing could catch every designation of how people see themselves, but it would be a way to be more inclusive, to recognize that not everybody fits on the binary model.
What have been the biggest challenges and obstacles you've faced in launching this clinic? Have there been some political obstacles, for instance, Dr. Imborek?
So what I would say is that we have had great support from especially Dr. Rami Boutros, who is going to be the director of Iowa River Landing, that Nicole and I had talked to each other and knew that this was something that we both felt strongly for and that we felt that there was a need for it in this community. And Dr. Boutros has been really wonderful and supportive and has made this happen. So we've had, you know, just the barriers of trying to make sure that when people walk through the door that it is going to be that welcoming place that we're hoping for. And the electronic medical record is one of those places where it wants everyone to be in a box that can be checkmarked or chosen. And unfortunately, not everyone fits into those boxes. But I would have to say that we are not the first institution that's asking these questions and pushing the companies that make electronic medical records to change, and that this will eventually happen. And we can proudly say that we were one of the reasons that it will happen.
Mm-hmm. I guess more broadly than just companies that make a medical record software, of course, the topic of LGBT rights is very controversial, especially at this time, especially in this state, a state that for several years now permits same-sex marriage. Is there pushback from the community at large in any sense for a clinic like this? Have you experienced reaction that you would say is pushing against having such a clinic?
You know, I would say that I was thrilled and excited to hear how much enthusiasm it was. That Dr. Imborek mentioned Dr. Boutros, but I would say all the way whenever I went to every level of the administration, there was nothing but support from the University of Iowa administration and so many others. And so my nurses were excited. Their main question, their main concern, they're mostly worried about, do I know what to say? Do I have enough training? But in terms of wanting to be welcoming, I would say it was throughout. Everybody was thrilled to do that.
So we all know the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics is a world-renowned training facility for doctors, other medical personnel. So will they be included somehow in this clinic so that if you want to specialize in LGBTQ medicine as a doctor, as a nurse, this would be a great place to come for training?
I think this is a great place for training. And I'll let Katie speak to that as well because she does a lot of the lectures to the medical school. But I would say we've had numerous emails from the medical students asking to participate in the clinic and to have rotations in the clinic.
Yeah, so we're not quite ready to do that yet, but we're hoping that if we can get a really great response from the community that this is a clinic that is needed, and that if we can have enough time where we're seeing patients and having a patient contact, that we definitely see this being an elective rotation for medical students if they're interested, and hopefully also being able to bring in resident physicians to be able to see these patients who they all see, but just not on such a concentrated type of level.
Doctors, we have time for one caller right now. If you put your headphones on, you'll be able to hear Dana. Dana calling from Fort Dodge. Hi, Dana. Not much time. What's your question or comment, please?
My comment is, we got a transgender daughter, and she's 17 years old right now. And for almost 10 years, we have never found any mental doctors, you know, psychologists or anything to take care of her. She's always had to go way out. Right now, she's in Boston because there's nothing around here. So I was wondering, is there going to be anything with her mental health?
Yes, we are working very hard to a variety of colleagues, including mental health, from psychiatry to psychology, to provide very good referrals. We have a number of mental health providers in our community. They're affiliated with us. They're delighted to care for patients. They're transgender and to provide care. So if your daughter were to come here, we'd be more than glad to help and make the appropriate referrals.
Mm-hmm. Dana.
Okay,
go ahead, Dana.
Well, I was going to say, we've went to numerous doctors and psychologists that say they've dealt with it. But once she goes there, they're more or less just learning from her. And that ain't what we're looking for. We're looking for someone to knows what we're talking about or what she's talking about.
Okay, Dana, thank you for bringing up that story from Fort Dodge. Perhaps that's a good way to dovetail toward the end here, to have you tell us how people can contact this new clinic when it opens next week, or perhaps find out more information online about it. What will it be called?
So it would be called the LGBTQ Clinic at Iowa River Landing Internal Medicine. And the phone number for contact is 314-7444. Again,
okay.
319-384-7444.
And we'll try to post this on our website or our Facebook page when we put this program up as well, so that that link is there as well. And very quickly, the services offered by the clinic, remind us of those. You have about 30 seconds.
So at this point, primary care home with Dr. Imborak and myself, so we can provide, again, as primary care physicians, we can take care of the whole person and make referrals as appropriate.
Okay. Do you expect that dedicated LGBTQ clinics will become commonplace throughout the country in the future, or will this remain very unique?
I would hope it would be a first example of many.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Nicole Nicely, Professor of Internal Medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, Dr. Katie Imborak, Clinical Assistant Professor of Family Medicine, also at the College of Medicine at the University of Iowa, two primary care physicians who will staff a new clinic for LGBTQ patients. And when we come back in just a moment, we'll talk with a conversation I had with Iowan Talia Lamon. When she was just 10 years old, she rallied students from thousands of U.S. school districts to report more than $10 million for Hurricane Katrina relief efforts. And this hour, in the second half hour, we'll talk about the nonprofit she founded called Random Kid and her new book about the power of anyone. That's when we return. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My next guest is Iowan Talia Lamon. You may remember her name from the news. Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times wrote about her, "If your image of a philanthropist is a stout, gray geezer, then meet Talia Lamon. I'm supporting her for president in 2044. Well, when Talia was just 10 years old, she rallied students from 4,000 U.S. school districts to report more than $10 million for Hurricane Katrina relief efforts. And after realizing the potential of what she had done, Talia founded Random Kid. That's a nonprofit organization that brings youth together across the globe, providing them with innovative tools and resources to create positive change. And today, Random Kid has unified the efforts of 12 million children, bringing aid to four continents. Talia Lamon is now 17, and she's a senior in Des Moines, attending Roosevelt High School and Central Academy. Hi, Talia.
Hello, how are you?
We have to mention you're the author of a new book published just today, A Random Book About the Power of Anyone, published by Free Press. Congratulations on what I assume is your first book.
Yes, my first book.
At the age of 17, not bad. Why did you set out to write this book?
Someone actually came to me and asked me if this was something that I wanted to do. And I never thought about it before, but I sat down and I said, okay, well, if I were to write a book, what could it possibly be about? And then I took just that idea and I pitched that to a few different publishers and just flew out there to New York and met with six different publishers, and we just got a really tremendous response.
Mm-hmm. If you could describe this book, and you also have a bunch of how-tos in your book, actually, one of them is how to give an escalator speech, the new elevator speech. How would you give an escalator speech about your book right now?
Well, the book is about how to do greater than you know how to do and how to become something greater than you know how to be. And the idea of that elevator escalator thing that you're talking about is that you shouldn't have to be contained by four metal walls, but rather you should be free to spread out, and the idea should actually raise you higher in the process.
Let's start a little bit earlier in your process. What led to this book was the amazing success you had Hurricane Katrina relief effort. How were you able to be a part of raising $10 million when you were just 10 years old?
So the kids across the nation ended up reporting over $10 million, and that was due to kids, some trick-or-treating for coins instead of candy on Halloween. Others raised money in other ways. And the main reason that we were actually able to be so successful was because when I started out, I had this goal. I wanted to raise $1 million, and I decided that I was going to be the CEO of this effort, which I decided stood for the Chief Executive Optimist. And my brother, who was 6 years old at the time, came up to me, and he was very upset, and he said, and this is his quote, "I'm opposed to what you're doing. I'd rather trick-or-treat for pirate relief." And those were his exact words, and it was very unexpected. And I didn't know what to do with that. But what I decided to do was just to make room for it anyway. And so I offered him a title as well. And his title became our official CON, our Chief Operating Nemesis. And we put him on our website in a Darth Vader costume. And the Today Show happened to be visiting our little website, and they saw his photo and then invited us onto their program, CEO versus CON.
Mm, and in your brother's name is Xander.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. So once you were on the Today Show with that, what followed? How did it sort of crescendo from there?
So what happened was, I think because of this opposition, the Today Show took notice. And because it was on the Today Show, that really helped to spread the word. And I believe that my brother was the reason that we were able to be so successful, and I've learned kind of from that being willing to make room for those unexpected things in your life really creates the best opportunities, because by definition, you know, those miracles can only appear in unexpected places.
Mm-hmm. So help us understand that the fundraising nature of this original venture was not that they would send the money to you, was it? You would tally it.
Right. So the idea was that kids would trick-or-treat for coins instead of candy. And then all these proceeds would go towards, the Red Cross. And then eventually we ended up getting very closely involved with UNICEF in order to send the funds to where they needed to go.
In your book, you explain, you make the case for investing in a kid who is raising money for a charity and how that's better than simply investing in a charity. Why is that?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed through a lot of the statistics that I've been looking at through Random Kid is that when you invest in a youth's idea to better the world, that they'll actually turn that investment into at least a 200% to 1,000% return for your cause, which means for me that I can say to business leaders, look, you can give $1 to Haiti or you can give $1 to a kid and that will yield $2 to $10 for Haiti. And so based on this idea, I wanted to blueprint this. And so I took it to St. Louis and we started out with 247 youth. And we ended up impacting over 100,000 youth. And the return on investment, just purely financially, was a 911% return. And so now I want to be able to take this and distribute it across the nation. And so the goal with that project, which is called The Big Return, is 50 states in the next 5 years. And we're looking now to get $2 million in order to really start that off.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a second. I wanted to ask you more about the nature of kids. What in this investment in kids, what is it about the nature of kids that makes them such a good investment?
I think the thing about kids that makes them so unexpected in what they do and therefore makes them so successful is that kids haven't created a box. And because there's no box that they have to think outside of. And it's that that genuineness and that just willingness to really just to be brave and to go for it that I think makes kids so successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, The Big Return, you mentioned this. This is a project you launched in 2011.
Right.
How is that different than what you did before?
Well, the thing about I mean, it's really taking what Random Kid does and almost making it a local thing. Random Kid has always provided kids with all the tools and resources that they need to make a difference for whatever it is that they care about in the world. And the thing that I love about The Big Return is it's really bringing together kids and youth and nonprofits and community leaders, and they're all coming together to make an impact for their local communities, whereas a lot of the projects that Random Kid continues to do and had done previously was to do more international and global projects.
Mm-hmm. What are the tools? If I go to get involved with Random Kid, and I am a kid myself, what tools and resources can I take advantage of?
So that can be 501c3 umbrella coverage. We have a lot of kids that are typically older because we work with ages 5 to 25 that come to us and say, you know, I already have a nonprofit or organization or something, and I just want to know if I can use your 501c3 umbrella. And so we offer them that. For a kid that comes to us and says, you know, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to do something, we help them to find that passion. And so consulting. And for a kid that says, you know, I already know what my passion is, but I don't know how to do a project that can relate to that, we help them to come up with those ideas. And we provide them with financial microloans if that's something they need, or product development, or web conferencing, telephone conferencing, really whatever it is that they need to pack them up to be successful.
Does Random Kid have a headquarters?
My house.
In Des Moines?
Yeah, I live in Waukee, actually.
So what is the office, the headquarters of Random Kid look like?
Well, it's a library, and it's actually my mom's library. We have a computer in there and some books, and that's our headquarters.
And with that, from that library, with that one computer, you connect with how many people?
We've worked with 12 million kids on 20 different countries.
Wow. How do you do it?
Well, it started out with emailing, which was huge, especially in the beginning. And a lot of the projects, even early on, we communicated through chat rooms, which at that time were cutting edge.
Exchange information with 1 million children, let alone 12 million children. How does the network work?
Right. So on the Random Kids site, www.randomkid.org, we have a platform where kids can come on and unite what their different projects together that are all under the big whatever it is, the problem that they're trying to solve. So, for example, if it's the world's water crisis, you can have kids in California and kids in New York and kids in Minnesota that are all within their classrooms doing different projects to raise money for that cause. And then they're all pooling their efforts together to make an even bigger impact.
If you've just joined us, my guest this half hour is Talia Lamon, and she is author of a new book, A Random Book About the Power of Anyone. She's the founder of Random Kid. That's a nonprofit organization that brings youth together across the globe and helps them create positive change. These 12 million children that come to Random Kid and help are providing help on four continents. When you see the type of kids and the messages that they send, the type of projects that they're looking to do, or perhaps they don't have a project and you help them find their passion, do you have a certain type of kid that you see comes to Random Kid to help the world, to effect positive change?
You know, that's the thing I love about Random Kid, is that we are really about helping the random kid. And I think that there's a lot of organizations that allow for that kid to, you know, to receive grants or things for the amazing things that they've already done. Or there's also organizations that do exactly the opposite, where they really help to, you know, build up those youth. And while those are both very important things, what I love about Random Kid is we can do both and everything in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's really important.
You mentioned passion, though. One of the reasons people come to randomkid.org is to discover their passion, even if they don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help people find their passion? What's the secret?
Well, I think you have to kind of look at whatever it is that motivates you, first of all. I know that for me, the thing that motivates me is the need to solve a problem. A lot of people ask me all the time, you must be so compassionate to want to do that. And I think compassion is just one thing that drives a person. But I know that, especially with Hurricane Katrina, it was that I wanted to solve that problem. And that's what made me passionate and made me want to do something about it. And I think one of the things to help kids to find their passion is for them to realize that they can simply be who they are and do what they do to make a difference for whatever it is that they care about. And we actually do this workshop at Random Kid where we deconstruct these heroes or role models that we look up to. And we'll look at someone like Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa and we'll say, who was Mahatma Gandhi? He was simply a lawyer who was challenging unfair British laws, and he was simply doing what he does to make a difference. And Mother Teresa was simply a nurse who was tending the sick. She was just doing what she does to make a difference. And then we look at what they already know how to do, the skills that they already have, and the things that they're already passionate about to make a difference, and to tell them that, you don't have to become someone, that you already are someone.
Mm. How did your upbringing can lead you to on this path?
Well, I know that for me, I feel like everyone you meet is a role model in some way, whether that's something, you want to be or something you don't want to be. But the people that I look up to and are positive role models for me in my life, would be my brother, because of how genuine he is as a person. And I think that's something that is sometimes very hard to find nowadays. And so I look up to that in him. Another person that's a role model for me is my grandfather, who happens to be a Holocaust survivor. And he accidentally kind of gave me the motto that I live by. And the story behind that is he fought in the Polish resistance and he was imprisoned by Hitler's army and later liberated by the Canadians. And through everything that he went through, I had expected him to be this bitter person because of what he's gone through. But he's not. He's instead one of the kindest people that I know. And his name is Henrik Lamont. And of course, I didn't know him during this time. But one of the things that I always noticed about my papa was that whenever we went out to eat or went shopping or anything like that, his credit card was always the first one on the table. And when I decided one day to ask him, I said, "Hey, Papa, why is it that you always insist on paying for everything?" His answer was simply, "Because I can." And so that's become the motto that I live by. Why put the coin in the can, or why vote, or why smile, or let the person go ahead of you in line, just simply because I can. And because we all can, and I really think that's the best reason to do anything.
Talia, you have such a remarkable achievement in success in only 17 years of life. I wonder, even though you've had such success, are there some mistakes that you've made along the way?
I think that everything that I've done, it turns out okay in the end. And maybe that sounds a little cliche, but when I've found that when I head down a path, and it's not the right one, that there's something that points me in a different direction, and I'm not stopped by something like a stop sign, but rather it's a wrong way sign telling me to go a different direction. And I think so many times we go to people and we ask them for things, and we're looking for that yes, but I think it's so important to get the true answer. And if that answer is a no, I think that's so helpful to you as well, because the person that tells you no is also rooting for your success, because they're saying, no, not this way, but this way, and redirecting you to a better direction.
So you've heard a lot of no's in your pleas for help.
I've heard some no's, yes.
You've heard some no's. You have in your book, the book you've just come out with today, it's been published, A Random Book About the Power of Anyone. You have a section in it with a lot of how-tos. How to Do It All and a Little More is the title of the section. Let's talk about a few of these things, the how-tos that you think are especially important. How to brainstorm the best ideas. How do you do that?
Well, I think that what everyone says about brainstorming is that, you know, there's no, you know, bad idea, and it's important to really get all those ideas on the table. And there's a whole bunch of different, you know, tips and tactics that are in the book of different ways to look at things from a different perspective or play on other people's ideas to really end up with the best ideas in the end.
Mm-hmm. There's one here, too. You certainly got our attention. How to get media attention.
I think the thing about that is to really use your youth shamelessly. and I know that when I did TLC, the first thing I did was I sat down with my number two pencil and my lined notebook paper, and I wrote out exactly what I wanted to do. And my mom helped me fax that to TV stations and newspapers. And I really think, I mean, you can back me up on this one. I really think the media took notice because it was different and because it was from a kid. And Maxine Clark, who's the chief executive bear of Build-A-Bear Workshop, says that, you know, they always open those pink envelopes that have drawings and stickers on them first.
I think you've got us tagged here in the media. How to speak like a president.
So the funny thing about that was that when I was in the beginning, when I was just kind of learning how to talk, I guess you could say, I've never officially been, you know, coached by anybody. But when I started out, I emailed just some people that I would hope would become a part of my network to see what kind of advice and tips that I could get. And the person that – one of the people that ended up writing back to me that was willing to help out was Ford's speechwriter. And, of course, I jumped on that, and they kind of talked me through how to write my first speech. And so kind of from that, when I delivered it, I think people heard it in the way it was delivered, and it sounded kind of presidential. I wonder why. And so from that, so I guess the first thing you could do is, you know, hire a speech writer that writes for a president. But throughout there, I do give some tips of ways to write your speech that make it easier to give because it's about the delivery as well as what you're saying about, as well as the content. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You also have things that you didn't – sort of life lessons you give. And this is not just a book for kids, would you say, or is it?
I would say it's a book for youth, but it's definitely – I would think that business leaders can also gain a lot of things from this book.
Explain one of the lessons you have here. You're saying that sideways is a better way to go than forward.
So the idea behind that one primarily comes from my brother, because I realized, you know, I decided I was going to raise $1 million and I was going to be the CEO of this effort. And my brother came up to me and he was opposed to this. And so it's about how taking that step to the side and allowing him to come into the picture actually enabled my success and allowed me to be more successful than I ever could have imagined before.
If you had just denied him a part in what you were doing and not allowed him to try to raise money for pirates...
The Today Show wouldn't have took notice of it, I don't think, and I don't think we would have been able to rally kids across the nation to, you know, rank their giving power with the top five corporate donors to Katrina.
Another saying in your book that, Talia, that you turn on its head, that you'll hopefully explain here, too many cooks, you write, is the right number.
Right. So the idea with too many cooks is the right number is that every person should really be able to lead with their passion. And when everyone is in charge of what they're doing, that you're the most successful. And so one of the things that we do at Random Kid is encourage kids to personalize everything that they do to make it something that they can really be proud of. And so I think that allowing everyone to lead with their passion and lead with their best skills really makes for the most successful project.
Now, tomorrow you will be back on the Today Show, I understand. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Uh-huh. You'll be a guest on the Today Show. What will you be doing?
So I'll be talking. The interview is with Jenna Bush, who I happen to have met at Women in the World just previously. And it's with me and also my brother and I believe my mom. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to put on there. I'm excited to see it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a start time for us in the Midwest here?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I'll have to check on that.
I wonder, many of our listeners must be asking, Talia Lemann, you were only 17. This all started when you were 10 years old. How in the world do you fit in what seems like managing a full-time job, writing a book, leading randomkid.org? How does that ever fit in with being a kid and going to school?
Well, you know, things have to go. For one, pop culture. Don't ask me about anything related to pop culture or sports. I won't know what you're talking about. So unfortunately, that was the first thing to go. But, you know, there's so many benefits, and I really love it. I love being busy, and I find that the more things that I'm doing, I'm actually more productive, and I actually am more efficient when I'm doing more. And it's interesting, too, because I like being able the perspective of going to school and also doing things, you know, I guess you could say in the real world, is an interesting twist, and I love being able to kind of switch between the two.
Even though you don't keep up on the latest in pop culture, do you have some music that we can go out on that reminds you of being optimistic and creating positive change?
Wanna Be Starting Something by Michael Jackson.
Okay. Talia Lemann, your new book, your first book, congratulations, is A Random Book About the Power of Anyone. Talia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, and we had help in Des Moines today from Clay Masters. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.